Welcome to Label Sessions Presents, where we meet the people building the future of leadership, innovation and growth. I'm Patrick Hallett-Morley, a strategist and brand leader who knows firsthand what it takes to build, scale and sustain new ventures inside rapidly growing companies. Patrick's career spans fintech and technology startups, including helping scale SumUp from a 100-person team to a multinational company with over 2,000 employees, leading brand strategy across Europe, the US, and South America. Patrick, you've lived the reality of growing brands from zero budget campaigns to fully integrated global media strategies. And now you help organizations launch new ventures, challenger brands, and spin outs without losing their identity along the way. You're leading kind of our new ventures accelerator at Label Sessions, designed to help companies move beyond slow innovation pipelines and, you know, actually bring new ideas to life inside these complex organizations. Patrick, thank you so much for being here. How are you? How are things going? What's new with you?
Cool. Yeah, good morning, guys. It's good to talk to you again. Things are going well. Like, it feels like it hasn't rained here in 2025, which being in Amsterdam is quite a unexpected start to the year. So things are feeling good in that sense. And lots of weird little things going on. So happy to try to make sense of it all and add something to the conversation around innovation companies are struggling with at the moment.
Wonderful. And we're also joined with Nick. Nick, you're kind of part of Label Sessions and talking all about the new accelerator and things from the Label Sessions end. Also welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because obviously I'm not based in Amsterdam, but right now, because we're a few weeks away from Money 2020, or every fintech person I know in other parts of the world is suddenly asking, what do I do in Amsterdam? Like, how do you find your way around Amsterdam? Where should I stay in Amsterdam? So all of a sudden, Patrick, your knowledge becomes doubly interesting, I think.
Right.
Like, hell, there's a lot of race. Although, like all these things, when you go to a big trade event, nobody's going to see any of Amsterdam anyway. Everyone's going to have the kind of fiction that they're going to see some of Amsterdam, but actually they'll just see an exhibition hall and a couple of evening events. That's what they'll see. But that's the nature.
Exactly. Patrick, it's brilliant to have you here. I'd like to kind of start off at the beginning, kind of with your time at SumUp. I know you oversaw huge growth there. Was there a moment where you realized that, you know, scaling it isn't just about budgets and things like that, but it's about the whole kind of uniting teams, cultures and ways of thinking? Can you run us through kind of your experience with all of that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there was a moment. I guess there were a few moments that kind of stand out, or at least in how I remember it, were kind of in hindsight quite like pivotal or represented quite a shift. And I guess the main dynamic was that things had gone pretty well. So, you know, the company was kind of in a good spot, and it was able to scale pretty effectively. Pretty much every cent was going into Facebook, and it was working super well, growing well across all the markets we were in, expanding pretty well, whatever. And at a certain point, that audience sort of dries up, right? It became harder to stick with that same approach. But of course, because it had been such a success story for us, it made it just that little bit harder to escape it, kind of a bit addicted to what was working, basically. So we were sort of faced with this chasm of finding something new that was going to work not only as well as what had worked before, but alongside what was working before and at like a much bigger scale. So that period wasn't necessarily a particular moment, but that period I think was really key, because it's always sort of the most logical, the most obvious thing is to keep doing what you're already doing and what's working. But the sort of the scary unknown path was in the end the right one, which was to, you know, try a bunch of new things and not know which of them, if any of them, would work, and try to unlock something that gets you somewhere you need to be, but you can't kind of imagine the pathway, like each step of the way, if you see what I mean.
It's interesting, Patrick. I think it's quite often I don't know how big the chasm is in different instances, but I guess it's quite often there may be this gap between the launch phase and the kind of growth model, or the kind of what gets you going at the start and what's going to like turn you into something bigger afterwards. I think it's quite a tough mental thing for teams to get their head around sometimes, that like, because I guess to some extent it's not just picking the new thing, it's also recognizing that maybe the secret source of the success of the growth phase, or the little story of the launch phase, isn't necessarily what's going to power you for the future as you thought it was. It's kind of a emotional journey maybe for teams sometimes as well, do you think?
For sure. And I think, you know, in the case of SumUp, it was very like a very well-known and common like application now, of course, but that model of doing card payments in this way was novel in a sense, but of course at the same time it was doing card payments, which was a incredibly well-established thing that was, you know, that exists kind of in every market really. So I think in the early stage there was a lot more kind of convincing and a lot more working on the basics of how you can make, for example, the hardware work and stick to the right price to be able to attack this sort of long tail market that was kind of underserved by the rest of the industry. And of course there were other players in that space at the same time, like notably Square in the US, for instance. Mm-hmm. So between those phases of kind of establishing that and then stepping into a bigger growth phase, you know, very classically, right, we had to shift from that sort of some kind of early adopter weirdo people that were giving something a try that was kind of relatively untested and wasn't always going to work as well as it should, to something where you kind of knew it was working and it was just a matter of finding the right people or finding a way to get to the right people. And internally, I think that also meant we needed very different people from like between those different phases, like and phases beyond that as well. Like it's goes from being not exactly a geeky thing, but it was a very small minority of people that maybe were motivated or interested for one reason or another to go into the space, towards something that is a, you know, more or less a mass adopted product in its space and with the competitors. And I think what helped with that culturally or sort of in the mindset of the team was that we always talked about the addressable market being basically 10% of the population, like as a very, very rough figure. Yeah. Because basically 10% of the population in most, you know, in any given market is freelancers or business owners or whatever. So it's a super rough guide. And it's obviously not what you build your strategy on exactly, but this idea that the addressable market is so much bigger than the kind of the battle you're currently in, yeah, always sets you in that way that once you have the resources, the inventory, whatever it is that's kind of holding you in that stage, like once you have those things in place, there is the theoretical idea of scale, right? There is a, in that, like within the wider space, there is sort of this blue ocean thing of like, there are loads of people that we could get to that we aren't able to get to at the moment for one reason or other, but there's no question that they exist. And I think that's quite different from a business that's doing something that's innovative in a deeper sense, as in they're coming up with something very, very new. But it's also different from the mindset of the incumbent, you know, the banks or whoever it is that was providing card terminals to larger businesses where they had higher fixed costs but would make much more money because they were able to charge people more. So knowing that there's that growth potential there, but focusing on the next stage or the battle that's in front of you, I think was kind of key, both for today and for next quarter or next year, you know, kind of constantly shifting between those two modes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, because I think it's quite a different role for the sort of marketing leaders around a thing like that. Because in the launch phase, it tends to be that there's a big bold idea that someone's had around how they're going to go to market, and it's great if it works at the start. And whilst you're saying typically you're serving a early adopter group that's quite weird, it tends to be quite often that that's a bit of overlap between that group and a lot of the people that are in the company. So there's a lot of empathy that's kind of there. And then once you get into the growth phase, then that's actually where you got to have built a function by that time, because actually you're running lots of different experiments and you need lots of different input from different, it's quite a different role by the time you're into that phase, where you're more running a function versus being the kind of visionary quite often at the start.
Yeah, for sure. I think maybe this is, you know, slightly different to your point, but I think one of the challenges that we often faced was that we were mostly based in Berlin and, you know, big office in Sao Paulo and other places, but basically we were all, like, not that many of us were the target audience at a certain stage, beyond the sort of casual use or you're at the flea market doing your thing, whatever. But what became sort of the core target audience were people who really cared about what the commission was, because, you know, their margins and so on were important, or they were skeptical about the idea of going from cash to card in general, less so in the UK because they're kind of already in a different point at that stage. But, you know, in markets like Italy or Germany or whatever, like, the mindset of, for a whole host of reasons, not wanting your product kind of at any price was something that I think we needed a constant reminder of, right? We needed to go out and speak with people and work in the, you know, go out into the field, as it were, and, like, talk to these people and try and understand them, because you're never going to have a business where everyone working on the business is the target audience. But I think you can certainly put more effort into trying to understand them more, and also understand that there's a huge diversity from a digital or card payment skeptical German taxi driver to someone who's in Sao Paulo selling drinks on the beach, right? They might arrive at the same conclusion that they don't want to talk to you and they don't like your offer or your offering. But how you go about convincing them starts by understanding who they are, what their concerns are, what they want to do. It's not really from a technical perspective. It's not really strictly speaking from a marketing perspective. It's not a question of if you can find the audience. Very often it's more how you can find the audience and address them in a way that they feel like their challenges or their skepticism is understood, and kind of square the circle for them. And if you can't do that, I don't, you know, it's not really a question of how much money you can throw at the problem in a marketing sense.
I think that's super interesting, but I'd love to kind of jump over and talk about the accelerator that you're leading with Label Sessions. And, you know, I guess why do you think this is a particularly kind of urgent now? So, you know, at a time when it seems like every sector seems to be under pressure to innovate faster, innovate now, kind of why is this a good time to be thinking about these kind of things and kind of launching your accelerator?
I guess it starts with the kind of the concept or the nature of innovation to begin with, right? It I guess, in some, maybe being slightly unfair to some people, like, innovation can be a way, or is sort of a magic thing that solves problems, like, you know, fundamental problems. And if you start with this idea, I think it's very difficult to be successful in your endeavor to be innovative, right? If you're using it as a way to defy gravity or to kind of change the rules of how you operate. The need, I guess, is there because, well, for a bunch of reasons, but somehow in a meta way, like, things are moving very quickly all the time, which is sort of such a cliche way of thinking about it, but it's sort of to an extent true, or at least it's understood to be true, and you know, therefore kind of becomes true that we don't have markets or market segments that buy like their parents did or behave in a you know, in a common way through their life and so on. And we're you know, for so many reasons, but, you know, probably for stuff like media and advertising and how people consume, that we're a lot more interested or motivated as an industry in following trends or creating trends or bandwagoning trends or whatever. That again, whether or not that actually needs to be the case, it sort of becomes the case because we're constantly chasing this sort of identity, like, branding and consuming around identity rather than mm-hmm. function or what something does. And that, I guess, in the age of the smartphone, you know, kind of super broadly, like, that is, you know, particularly true maybe in stuff like fintech, where you suddenly have brands that sort of try to build their market around, like the way that people identify and the way that they see the world and the things that are important to them, whether it's, you know, alternatives to the system in the DeFi and crypto sense, or whether it's taking more control over how their pension or their money is invested in a environmental or any other sense. And I guess that thing is sort of like it feels very important for our time. And I guess from the corporate side, from the business side, trying to understand that and respond to it is maybe where the innovation is being deployed or attempted to be deployed. Trying to keep on top of those things, trying to understand how, you know, coming back to what I was saying before, like something that maybe worked before isn't working anymore. So you need to do something different to try to get yourself into a different outcome. So, I mean, speaking super broadly and meta, and happy to go into more detail, but I feel like that's sort of what life feels like now for both consumers and for brands and for companies in general.
I think it's an interesting thing as well in terms of assumptions that sit around the word innovation, like we're talking about there, or even just the way in terms of how people set up ventures. Because I guess one of the things that's really interesting in the world just now is, as you're saying there, Patrick, I guess in terms of the kind of new models that there are around going to market and doing marketing and launching things and growing things. But maybe to a certain extent, the way that people talk about innovation hasn't caught up with that as much, because essentially if you look at lots of the companies where I look at their, you know, innovation board or ventures board, whatever, the kind of assumption around innovation is it's all about creating these new products and new propositions, and then once you get it to a launch phase, then a thing switches on, which is marketing. And that constantly at the moment is either turning on in a dysfunctional way, so it turns out that there's no way to scale this, either they can't get their demand or the cost per acquisition is too high, or all these kind of ideas. But in an environment where there's so many more options there or choices you could make there as to how you grow out this. So I think one of the things that's really urgent about this just now is kind of facing directly into where a big problem in the innovation pipeline actually is in practice, which is actually there are a range of quite interesting propositions that are being designed around the world, but those that need to find a new way to grow, first of all, need to have some support around them. How can we really kind of think that through and really grow that growth engine in a thought through way, in a really robust way? But the thing that makes it even more acute, I guess, is that actually there's a sort of dysfunction in the way that big companies think about innovation, because quite often the reason they're investing in some of these new ventures is because they want to have the lived experience of growing new routes to market. They want to go after a different target segment than the master brand does or the rest of it does. So the kind of logic of that is there. But yet when it goes into action, what haven't yet been good enough is a kind of, I can talk really broadly, is that the innovation sector are kind of growing those in new ways. We kind of design quite new things, and then we try and apply quite old models to how it grows. And that both isn't very effective, and it also isn't actually, even if it was effective, wouldn't deliver what the bigger brand needs quite often, which is actually to have something in the world that's really exploring how the world works now, given everything that's changed in terms of the assumptions around marketing and launch phases and growth phases. So it's an interesting time, I think, in both those ways.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what I hear there, again, comes a lot down to definitions, right? What definitions and ownership, right? Like, I think when you start with the word like innovation, it can be very hard to... It ends up being something that has a lot of heavy lifting to do, and yet it doesn't often have much ownership or accountability behind it, or it's something that's expected without having a clear idea of what it necessarily is defined as or measured by. So as you say, like there is stuff happening, right? There are people doing stuff, there are people with good ideas, but having that alignment within an organization or within an industry, like having that alignment between the expectation of what your ideas are supposed to do in the field of innovation and the outcomes that the business needs to see from the innovation are not always the same thing. So you might have something that is genuinely novel and innovative, but is not being deployed or applied or just measured in a way that is meaningful to a company, or it's in the wrong place at the wrong time, or the expectation is wrong, or the the, yeah, like as you're saying, that we haven't really caught up with what innovation needs to be and needs to do in the climate that people are operating in, which kind of means that it's doomed to fail, or at least it's not, you can't kind of ensure success, because you're kind of always slightly gambling on what someone's understanding is going to be of it, or how it's going to be received.
Yeah. And I think also, there's also, I think actually you're saying that, Patrick, as well, the other phrase, which I think is quite a dangerous one that's in the ether a lot just now, is act like a startup, which mm-hmm. is all fair enough and kind of fine. But in terms of actually the business benefit, or the way that the venture is going to work, is that when they act more like a scale-up than a startup. And I think there's very little that's around that. So in terms of, even especially in the fintech space, you see these kind of banks that set up a new venture that does quite well at the start. And then they go through the hard yards of what you were talking about earlier, Patrick, I guess, in terms of scaling from a team of like 10 highly motivated, highly incentivized people into a team of maybe 100 people or such thing like that, going across different markets, solving different problems. And that's actually, strangely enough, quite hard. And actually, in some ways, just really badly managed quite often in these instances. So I think it's something really interesting in saying that's actually, you know, the kind of appeal of the think like a startup mantra that's around a lot of corporate innovation and government innovation now in different parts of the world is kind of fine for its own purposes, but the commercial case that all these things are built on requires it to scale, requires us therefore to think through how their marketing operation works. But there's actually very little support around that in the whole world. It's actually, there's much less of that in terms of the whole literature and books and kind of like conference speeches. It's very much more around the kind of founding moment, being an entrepreneur and all this kind of stuff, rather than actually looking at the phase where you've got a core idea, you've got some sign that there's something interesting in the outside world, there's a market you can go after. How do you actually capitalize on that? That's kind of like a kind of missing piece in the conversation a bit.
Yeah, I've got friends working in government, different governments, so I don't want to offend any nation state on the podcast today. But this, I think they hate this idea of being encouraged to act like a startup, again, because of, I guess, a misunderstanding from someone on what it might mean or what it's supposed to do or whatever. You know, you can be super generous with it and you can understand exactly what people mean. And you can also see how sometimes, whether it's in a corporate or public sector space, like it can be really seen as a shortcut to try and do something that feels like magic, or try and do something where you have no money, or try to do something where there's no rules or guidelines or anything set. And again, like the probably the right way to go is somewhere in the middle. Like definitely, whether it's a corporate or governmental environment, like there can be things that you can learn from startups that are missing, or even in a more basic sense, like there's probably people like I despair at the amount of people sometimes that are working super hard on optimizing people pressing buttons in apps in the private sector that are super intelligent people that would be brilliantly, would contribute brilliantly into the way that our countries work, right? And you know, not like that's not their fault, that's not their problem. But I think it's a kind of a cultural thing of like, do we have environments wherever they are that allow, accept, encourage certain ways of thinking? And I guess on the other side of that would that be a good thing? Because we can see in some cases how allowing maybe too much of this move fast and break things, entrepreneurial, whatever spirit, into places where it's not applied or managed or controlled in an appropriate way can cause meaningful damage to people that go beyond, you know, having a ping pong table in the office and drinking beers on a Friday and acting like a startup. I think it can mean such a wide range of things. And thinking that, you know, taking your example within like fintech and finance and stuff like that, like one of the things I think that people forget about acting like a startup in the fintech context is that all of these guys that scaled up their amazingly successful neobank thing a few years ago, they all realized at some point that they weren't making any money, at least not making any money doing what they were doing. And that doesn't mean it was a bad thing or a bad idea to go for, you know, when money was, when you could print money from investors and scale up super quickly or attract users super quickly. But that doesn't translate into a meaningful, profitable, sustainable business for the future. So if you come from the other side where you have the structure, you know, you're well funded, you're starting from a completely different place. Of course, there are always things you can learn from startups, but we need to be mindful of not learning the wrong lessons or jumping on someone else's vanity metrics that wouldn't mean something internally or whatever. So again, it just comes back to definition and expectations and who's accountable for what. Like it is really, at least for me, I really don't feel like there's a right way or wrong way of doing it. But what we can definitely do wrong is to use phrases or words or concepts or whatever in a loose, mystical, magical way and expect them to do a lot of hard work without being there on the ground and helping people understand what we mean when we say them or how that would translate to a user or a customer or a client, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And do what you do deliberately. Because I've also seen that pop up on another sort of hat I wear as a volunteer in a gallery. And one of the things I've heard from there is people saying to them, you need to operate more like a startup and even referring directly into fintech. But what they actually mean is find new ways to be profitable, which is actually very different from what the fintechs are looking to have ever done. Right? They've actually built models that scale, right? But mostly with investment money that's based on losing quite a lot of money for quite a while. It's like actually the language can be really unhelpful to speaking to what people are actually trying to do, which maybe, I guess it brings us around full circle a little bit as well, which is, I think, one of the dangers of innovation in a business context, and especially in a fintech context, is to become very focused on building the MVP and launching something. And actually, the big secret to success for most of these ventures is what happens next. It's actually, can you turn that into something that can scale? Scale may mean different things in different instances in terms of how quickly that's delivering a commercial return to the business as such, how much that is about increasing customer share in a very particular target market, how much it's about other agendas that are there, but actually building out a plan to execute on driving the benefit that you've kind of invested behind at the start. That's really the kind of frontier, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And as you said, that's not always the same. That's not the same thing for everyone, and it's certainly not the same thing as what people sometimes mean when they're looking for innovation or a startup mentality or we want everyone to act like a founder or any of this kind of stuff. Like it's super open to misunderstanding, and I think very often doesn't come from an earnest point of like, this is what we're trying to do. And as you say, being deliberate about like, this is our idea. This is how we want to play it.
And so I think almost leading on that one, for both of you, what are you almost most excited about for kind of this accelerator and, the things it's designed to address? What kinds of things can you see potentially coming up that this would be great for?
I think kind of reading between the lines of our discussion now, I think that when we talk about innovation, it has to come from a starting point of creating an environment where it is sort of set to allowed to flourish, right? And I say allowed because I think allowed is kind of very different from expected, right? Like it's creating an environment where the definitions are clear of what you're trying to do. There's a diverse range of outcomes that would be allowed, accepted, expected, maybe. That sort of sets the stage for the thing that, to be honest, excites me, which is more about creating or maintaining or developing environments where people are allowed to work like that. And I think that very often is the issue here, is that you've got expectations on or from the leadership of whatever it is that are being sent downstream vaguely and not necessarily aggressively, but with pressure. And you've got people that have then that expectation put on them to do something about it without the right environment to really do well. So I think if the accelerator has a purpose, it's the going in to help like grab hold of hopefully what's already, you know, the grassroots of what's already there for those environments and for those ways of working with people, and to really build more foundation, build more strength and depth in those spaces to allow for different outcomes, right? I think it's really about that. It's allowing for different outcomes rather than expecting specific outcomes. And along the way, you need to create or adjust or reflect on what the culture is that's preventing that from being the case in the first place. And that can be, you know, fluffy and noisy, and maybe there's some friction there, but I think that's really where the good work is. And if you can do that, I think you can unlock something really amazing within any space, within any team.
That's great. No, I think in general, I think we are, Labour Sessions is about enabling things. And I think this in particular is about enabling some of these, you know, good ideas that people have to find a way to win in the world. I think that's fundamentally it. And I think one of the things I'm more excited about that, you know, alongside that goal is, as Patrick was saying, I think it's also creating some great environments in these teams to go and do exceptional things. Because I think it's always the case. It's funny, even the last week I was catching up with a team who had launched a venture 4 years ago or something that actually achieved lots of its goals, but in a very different time frame than people thought it was going to achieve it in, and all those kind of things. But they're just incredible journeys for people. So actually, I think the people that were involved in that were quite bound themselves going through the experience, which sometimes felt great, sometimes felt terrible. But I think it's a really exciting process to be a part of. And so I hope that what the accelerator can do can, in a sort of classic business sense, can enable some really good ideas to find a way to win in the world and find a way to scale. And alongside that, can just, you know, create some really positive journeys for people. Because I think ventures in particular in big companies are a great chance for talented people in the company to stand up, take on accountability for something different, but also as a result, showcase what they can do and kind of drive a different agenda in a business as well. So I guess the kind of classic business reason is, hey, let's enable some of these great ideas to win in the world. And I think just the slightly more emotive one or personal one is just to spark some really good journeys for everybody. I think it's actually a bit of an adventure.
Yeah, the journeys thing, I think, is a really good way of putting it, right? Because those journeys don't exist, or they don't continue unless you've created the environment and the space for them to do so. And it's not a singular moment in time. It's obviously something that is a process and takes time, and in your example takes maybe sometimes more time than you wanted it to or expected it to, but that's, I think, really where you, that's the only way you can do anything meaningful in that space, is to allow, create an environment that fosters that way of thinking and working and those ideas to bubble up, and allow the time and the space and the resources to allow them to grab hold or to manifest, to get out there, to arrive in the world.
Wonderful. Well, I guess that kind of what you've both said just sums up so nicely. So, you know, thank you both for sharing your insights with us. And we're all super excited for the new Ventures Accelerator. And I wonder, you know, to the audience, if you're listening and thinking about how to launch your new venture and kind of inside your own organizations, you can check out the new Ventures Accelerator at labelsessions.com. Or alternatively, you can reach out to any of us on socials to learn more and to explore further. So thank you guys so, so much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. It's been a really interesting conversation. Yeah.